Ladies and gentlemen, get ready to embark on a journey like no other. Welcome to the Glum Lot Podcast,
your go-to destination for a unique blend of recovery and discovery.
I'm Brett.
And I'm Mark. And in this podcast, we will endeavor to create a safe and uplifting space for our guests and listeners to share their stories with sincerity and a touch of humor.
Remember, we are not a glum lot. The Glum Lot Podcast is more than just a source of entertainment. It's a beacon of hope, proving that even in the darkest moments, recovery is possible. Every story we share carries the power to inspire positive change.
So buckle up, get ready to listen, and join us in discovering the strength that lies within every individual's journey. This is the Glum Lot Podcast, where humor meets hope. We are on episode number 34 of the Glum Lot Podcast. I am Mark, and I am here with Brett, and I'm talking very fast for absolutely no reason.
My goodness.
I know. And we'd like to remind our listeners to go to our Facebook page, the Glum Lot Podcast Facebook page, and email us at theglumlotpodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, feedback, comments.
We're pretty nice guys,
right? I'll tell you.
What?
We're pretty nice guys.
Yeah, and we'd love to hear from our peoples.
Yes, our people.
Yes. So with that, Brett, what is on your mind for this episode?
First of all, I think we should start doing outtakes. Because we've had a few here.
Yeah, but I always erase them or record over
right
them.
Away.
I think, was it the last one? I think I did the I did the opening line three times, fumbling through it.
And, oh, it was so great.
Yeah.
Someday.
I got to save those bloopers, don't I?
Because we can't show imperfection, that's for sure.
No. Oh, my God, of course not. So what's on your mind, Mr. Imperfection?
What's on my mind? Oh, I'm plenty of that.
Oh.
Let's see.
He says.
So, I always start off with so.
You do. And you say sometimes.
And a lot of you knows.
You know, sometimes. You know, sometimes.
I work on my filler words, I think.
Sometimes, you know, I, sometimes I.
Sometimes I.
Well, let's go.
Think I get too busy for meetings.
Oh, God.
And
yes.
I see a lot of this in people that come in. I see a lot of people, especially people that I've sponsored or people that I've had some interaction with, and all of a sudden, after a few weeks, they've got, you know, they've got the new job again. They've got some things. They've reunited with their families again. And so now they only come on chip night.
Well, I can tell you this, speaking from experience myself, I didn't come to AA to get sober.
Right.
I came to feel better because I was in pain. Once the pain went away, the motivation to keep coming back and work hard on myself disappeared. So I stopped going to meetings, and then I went out. And then I came back, and
yeah.
I rebuilt, and then I went out. And I did this over and over again. And what I had to learn, the lesson I was learning was, it's not about wanting to go. It's about going.
Right.
No matter what, because it's good for me,
yeah.
And I need it.
Yeah, and for me, it was more along the lines of I felt that I could not be gone because I had these expectations of my family that I had to be there. You know, I've got three young kids. And so that was easy for me to say, I'm just too busy. You know, I've got to be here. And I had to realize I have to do this or else I'm not going to be there for those
kids.
And,
you know, people say, you know, it's like when something goes wrong in the cabin of an airplane, the oxygen mask drops. You got to put it on yourself first so that you can help others. And it's the same thing with this. Yes, you want a good family life.
Yes.
You want to be good to your people. But unless you're sober and taking care of yourself, you're not going to be able to do that very well.
No.
So that is job one. You know, what is your primary purpose?
That's right.
You know, and so from there springs forth all the good things in your life for yourself and those around you. And so hence the importance of meetings and being involved and staying in touch and texting and calling and all these great things we do with our fellow alcoholics that keep our lives on track.
Yep. And it's time to be selfish for a different reason.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't even consider it selfish. I consider it selfing. And I've heard that before,
Ooh.
That term, selfing. You know, and that all that is exhibiting self-care.
Love that.
Yeah. And when I exhibit self-care, it allows me to care for others. And if I don't do that, I become shitty and I'm no good to anyone.
So everybody, let's start selfing.
Start selfing. It's like getting up on the board. Oh, that's surfing.
I was thinking of smurfing.
Self-serving. Self-serving.
Anyways, we've got a guest.
But we digress.
Yes.
Whatever that means. Well, let's move on to our guest. We got a great guest. Known her for a long time. She's awesome. Very cool person. Without further ado, let's welcome Tammy. All right, Tammy, welcome to the Glum Lot Podcast. We're glad to have you here.
Well, thank you for having me.
And we're going to start out with your sobriety date.
That is May 22nd, 2017.
Okay, so it's coming up. This is May. We're recording this
We're coming up on 7 years.
Coming very soon to a theater near you is Tammy getting her seven-year chip. So we'd like to start at the beginning. Do you recall your first buzz off of alcohol?
Yes.
Tell us about it.
Okay. I was actually pretty young. I was 5 years old.
Wow.
Ooh, we might have a tie
yeah.
for the youngest now.
Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt, but these are important statistics.
Yes. Somebody did come in with that. What were they?
I think it was five.
Was it five?
Yeah,
okay.
Recently.
Well, you may have tied the record.
Okay. Well, my parents, you know, back in the day in the 80s, thought that it was okay to give me a glass of wine on New Year's Eve.
Oh. Well,
so celebration. It started with that.
Now, did you get anything out of that? Did you catch a feeling off it?
I don't, not that I remember. I think I was too young to
remember.
Do you
remember
really
how cool
much.
You were, though, with a glass of wine?
Yes.
Did that make you feel
yeah.
Yes. Up
and... Well, me and my friend would race to see who could finish
oh,
it first.
Holy crap.
Wow.
Yeah. You did start young. And so later in life, did you pick up alcohol again?
Yes.
How old were you?
I would say more like 14 years
yeah.
old was when I started again.
Okay. So the pretty typical. What was your exposure to alcohol like at that point?
That was stealing my parents' alcohol and filling it with water or,
Those and things. So you were doing this with your friends?
Yes, actually. I would have sleepovers and, mm-hmm. yeah, we would drink, like, my mother's wine and water it down. And
now, at this point, though, you are catching a buzz, right?
Yes.
And you're realizing what that feeling is.
Yes.
And you're digging that.
And it's wonderful,
What is that
Everything
feeling?
Everything is wonderful. It's
what is that
funny,
feeling?
You know.
Yeah.
You know, that's the connection. I think everybody gets that feeling, but there are those of us in the population who chase that.
Mm-hmm.
And who have a special, I know it says the doctor's opinion that we have a way of, alcohol's an effect on us. It doesn't have on non-alcoholic, you know, it affects us more. And actually, they say it's like an opiate-like reaction to it.
Euphoric.
Euphoric.
Oh, yeah.
And I was the same way. The first buzz I caught was like, I felt this feels like what it feels like to be normal.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked it.
Yeah.
And I decided that was going to be my path.
Yeah.
How did it go with you? So you're a teen, 14, 15, typical drinking age to start.
Well, I remember, you know, tripping on the stairs and laughing about it, you know, with my friend and just, you know, liking, you know, the dizziness that it gave me. And I really wasn't thinking much and just, you know, everything was funny.
Just a general light mood, right?
Yeah.
Mood enhancer.
Yeah.
And so what happened from there as you got a little older?
Well, I wound up meeting who would be my husband at 18 years old,
mm-hmm.
and he was able to buy me alcohol. So
now, when you were coming up, what was the drinking age?
It was 21.
Okay. All right. So you're not of age yet, but
right.
now you have complete access to alcohol.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All the time. And he was already an alcoholic himself.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I mean, it turned into like every night pretty quickly, actually.
You fit right in there, huh?
Oh, yeah.
So you guys are drinking together,
mm-hmm.
and you're drinking for effect?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and plus, you know, when you're young, it's like a party atmosphere, and it seems very normal,
yep.
right?
You invite friends over,
yep.
play games,
yep.
yeah.
And did you notice at that time that your drinking was different than anybody else's, or did you just seem to be part of the pack?
Part of the pack,
okay.
absolutely.
So no big deal. Did there come a point at which that started to change?
Yeah, after I had kids.
Oh, no kidding.
Mm, yeah, okay. After I had kids, I started realizing some of the behavior issues that it created.
Now, how old were you when you had kids?
I was 25 when I had my daughter and 27 when I had my son. So.
Okay, so you're getting in your late 20s,
mm-hmm.
and you're still drinking.
Yes.
Drugs are part of the deal?
Pot, yes.
Okay, so you're smoking weed.
Yep.
So you're still a pretty typical, you know, drinker smoker.
Yeah.
You know, nothing crazy.
Yeah. I mean, I was, that was my reward at the end of the day.
No repercussions, yeah. No lost relationships, jobs, money issues, arrests.
Not at that point.
Yeah.
No.
Oh, okay. That's, yeah. And that's,
the best,
you know what?
To come.
The funny thing is, like, after there are, we always look back in the time when there weren't.
Yeah.
And you're like, see, I'm not, I mean, you know, come on now.
Yeah. Look, I can get back to
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's right. So, so that all changed at some point, I'm sure, right?
Yes.
Because it is a progressive disease.
Absolutely.
What happened with your progression?
It got to the point where I wouldn't wake up to get my kids on the bus.
Mm.
That was one of the big issues that I noticed first. But I, at the point, I didn't care. I just, you know, all that mattered was that I would go to work, do my job, and then come home and then drink again and then circle around and do it all over again.
So the kids are a little late for school. You feel that's manageable. Right?
Yeah, they weren't late. They would get themselves on the bus.
Oh, okay.
Unfortunately, yeah. You know.
But I mean, you still have a job, and it's pretty manageable, right?
Yes.
But it's still like a, you know, wash, rinse, repeat type lifestyle.
Yeah.
And it centers around getting a buzz.
Yes, absolutely.
And so as with most people, when that happens, it doesn't just stay there. It kind of starts to widen out, right?
Mm.
Progress.
Right.
So what happened?
Well, I started to get unhappy in my marriage.
Mm-hmm.
He had lost his job, so he went through a bout of a few years of depression, and that's what kind of, you know, my drinking got worse. You know, he was not being so nice to me, so I was feeling bad about myself, so therefore I would drink
more. Did his
more.
Drinking get worse, too?
His drinking, it kind of stayed, I would say it stayed the same, but he was usually a good 9, 10 every night, you know,
yeah.
So... That was normal
so
for him.
So his heavy use was stable.
Yeah.
But heavy.
Right.
But yours was changing.
Mine was getting worse.
Okay. So you're consuming more.
Yeah, and you're dealing with a lot of things too, right? You're dealing with a person that's changed.
Yes.
Dealing with his depression and then the results of that depression.
Right? Plus two kids. That's a lot of pressure.
Took it out on me.
Yeah,
and
sure.
And my kids. Yeah, that was tough.
Yeah, for sure. Now... Was there a little birdie in the back of your mind telling you that this might be?
Yes, at that point in time, I knew it was a problem. And that's where it turned to, you know, I'm going to count my beers so that I don't go past this amount,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it was stuff like that, you
Some
know.
Controlled
just,
drinking.
Yes, trying,
yes.
But I would get to a certain beer, and I just wouldn't care anymore.
Oh, hell no.
And you know, normal people don't count their drinks.
Nope.
Right.
You know? But,
yeah,
but
two,
at the
I'm
time,
feeling a little woozy. I think I better stop.
Yeah, but at the time, you're thinking, you know, if I just don't drink so much.
Right.
If I can stop after, let's say, 4,
mm-hmm.
I'll be good.
If I drink a gallon of water first.
Yes.
You know,
mm-hmm.
whatever it
but
is.
But by the yeah, time you get to 2.
Take some ibuprofen before bed.
I did
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
I did that even before I was drinking.
A lot of people did, yeah.
Oh, man.
You know, preempt it. But by the time you get to 2, you forget about the 4.
Yeah.
You're just like, I'll stop when I'm ready. Because
mm-hmm.
I know when to stop. And
well,
then
yeah.
you don't.
So. Or I've already gone to this point. May as well finish and start
right.
over
yeah.
tomorrow.
Yeah.
And then you
try
wake up the next
tomorrow.
Day and say,
yeah.
Now, I'm not doing that. Today's the day I'm not doing that.
Yes.
And then
yeah.
you do.
Yeah,
so.
Almost every day.
So what happened? How did that progress?
I wound up having to leave my husband.
Mm-hmm.
I moved in with my mom. He kept the house. So I kind of moved out with nothing but the clothes that were in my closet.
Mm.
And I lived with her for a while, still drinking. And I spent the next 2 years in my own apartment drinking and progressively getting even worse than I was when I was with my husband.
So we're getting to some isolation type?
Yes,
yeah.
Absolutely. And, you know, he wasn't around to, you know.
Put the brakes on?
Yeah.
So the guardrails are gone.
Right.
And you're slipping deeper and deeper.
Absolutely. And my kids are noticing it. And, you know, I'm just, you know, I'm that drunk that, you know, she's
There's
just
no
drunk.
Hiding
just,
it.
Yeah, there was no hiding it.
Right.
No.
Mom's drunk again?
Right.
Did
and
you...
I tried to hide it, too, because, you know, I'd say, oh, yeah, I quit drinking and, you know, and then I'd be cracking them when they went to bed. And,
yeah.
You know.
Did the thought ever occur to you to reach out and get some help at that point, or weren't you there yet?
I knew there was help out there, and when I was telling them that I quit drinking, I was going to meetings.
Oh, okay. Well, so how did you end up
yeah,
at your first meeting?
How'd you know about
meeting?
That?
Yeah. How'd you end up at your first one?
Well, my cousin and my uncle are in the program.
Oh, okay.
So, that helped a lot. My cousin got me to my first meeting.
Now, how did you approach your cousin and say, geez, I want to check those meetings out.
I did.
So you knew something was up.
Yes.
Right? And you knew that you tried and failed and tried and failed and tried and failed.
Right.
Now, was this after people are telling you things are starting to get bad for you?
Oh, yeah. They were telling
me. Yeah, you just didn't come to the realization.
Yeah, they were telling me for years, but, you know, the same old thing where, you know, I'm not hurting anyone but myself.
Right.
Had you decided that this was just, you know, life's unfair, all this stuff on me, and that's why you isolated? I mean, what do you think was the reason you isolated?
I think I isolated because I wasn't dealing with the emotions of leaving my husband and my children.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I think that's why my alcoholism got worse, because I couldn't handle the emotions.
Yep. Common theme, right?
Yeah.
You know, it is.
That's exactly what happened to me. You know, I was not mature enough to handle anything.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? When we come into recovery and we put the drink down, that's great. But that's just a start, because now it's time to really have to deal with shit.
Right.
Without alcohol.
And but how great it is.
That's where the work starts.
You eventually listened.
Yep. Yeah. So what was your first meeting like?
My first meeting was in, it was just like a few miles from my house, and it was where my cousin had went all the time. So I went to that one, but I don't remember much.
Did you raise your hand and say, never been to a meeting?
Yes.
Okay.
I did. So they did do the, you know, whole
first
talk at me,
mm-hmm. yep.
you know, but I don't really remember anything.
Did it have much of an effect on you?
Not really. No, I did go home and drink. You
okay.
know?
Yeah. So you didn't have the desperation yet. You went out of curiosity.
I had the desperation, but I couldn't do it yet. Mm. I wasn't ready to do it yet.
Okay.
I knew I was desperate enough, but I.
But you didn't want to surrender yet.
It
right.
wasn't a light switch.
Yes.
did you come back?
Yes. It took about a year. I would go to meetings like maybe once a month.
Okay.
You know.
So every once in a while you'd step in and you'd hear some stuff.
Right.
But it wasn't enough. You'd go back out and you'd drink. But that shit gets in your head, doesn't it?
It does.
And then you start to hear it back a little bit when you're drinking. And you're feeling bad about your drinking. You're like, well, I remember hearing this in a meeting. Maybe they're right. I don't know. You know. So did something change at some point during that time for you?
Yes. I got into an abusive relationship, actually. We were both drinkers, and he wound up putting me in the hospital.
Mm.
And I sat in that hospital arguing with myself, that's what I say, for 2 days.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, there was a half of me that was saying, this is your one and only chance to quit. You got to do it now. And then the other one that was like, I don't care. I'm just going to, you know, be the same as I always have.
This is my life.
Yeah, you know? That's pretty typical. You know, and we talked about in a previous episode about that window. Mm-hmm. There's that window where the shit really is going down, and that's your time to jump.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't, what usually happens is you'll get another one, but it's going to be way worse.
Yes.
You know, so you saw this
yes.
opportunity.
And, you know, I mean, when I was going through that argument with myself, I was thinking, you know, it's going to be either jail or death. And I can't go to jail. I'm sorry, but.
Yeah. I'm too pretty for
way
jail.
Way too pretty for that.
I would not survive.
And you didn't want to die,
yeah.
right? So. What's going on in your head with this battle? Obviously, it's one side won out, right?
Yes. God actually helped me.
Mm, tell us about that experience,
Whoa.
Please.
Yeah.
I love that stuff.
Well, because I felt at that point in time I had nobody by my side, nobody, you know, that was cheering me on, and God was that person. God was the only person that was always there. So I was in the hospital for 2 days, and both days I went down to the chapel and I prayed. One day there was like a choir singing, and they invited me to come sing with them.
Really?
Holy cow.
Yeah, I mean.
Nice.
Did you have history with church and family and in your upbringing?
I was brought up Catholic, so I did the whole confirmation thing, but my mom was never really strict about it.
Okay.
She was like, she did teach me about a loving God, so I was brought up at least with a loving God.
So
even
you had
though
that in the back of your head?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Pretty awesome.
And you know,
there was even a choir, for Pete's sake.
I know.
And the great thing about AA when you come in is it's very loose and undefined, and they tell you a God of your understanding. And that's how I was able to be comfortable with it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that understanding naturally evolves even over time. So these strict things of religion don't work for me, but the AA God works for me.
Right.
You know. And so you're there for the hospital for 2 days, and you go down to the chapel one day, very comfortable. What happens the next day? You go down.
The next day I went down, and there were people singing, playing piano, and, you know, they actually welcomed me right in, you know, waved me right in, and they gave me one of the books and pointed to what they were singing, and, you know.
Yeah.
And we talked a little bit afterwards, and, you know.
So you had yourself a little spiritual experience.
I absolutely did, you know.
And yeah. did that tell you it's time to make a move?
Yes. It made me feel more secure in going down that hard road, yes.
Yeah. Now, had you read through the steps and knew there was a spiritual component to the steps and all that? Or did
yes.
That...
Okay. I did know that much.
Yeah.
I've always believed in God.
Yeah.
I consider myself a lucky one, you
wow.
know.
It so, came easy to you.
Oh, yeah.
It came easy.
Yeah. And so what is your next move? Do you call your cousin and say, I need to go
yeah.
back? And you go to a meeting. And
yep.
is it different this time?
Yes. I listened, and I didn't go home and drink.
Nah, that's
wow.
a pretty huge difference. Did you start looking for a sponsor?
No, because I went to a few meetings, and I actually talked to a person, and they said, you know, have you ever considered going to rehab? And I'm a pretty independent person, and, you know, if I don't work— You know, nobody's going to pay the bills,
yeah.
you know, and
yeah.
I was just like, I can't waste time in rehab, you know. Well, it got to that point where, you know, I had to go to rehab. I had to be away, you know, from public for a while. I
you needed
to be
that
away
time
from
away
the stores.
From life.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know.
So did you go for a 28-day?
I went for 2 weeks because that's all they would cover,
yep.
my insurance.
Oh, yeah.
And what was your experience like in rehab?
Well... I enjoyed the camaraderie. There were a few that came and went.
Yeah.
You know, didn't really stay.
Didn't want to be there.
Right. But I did have a few friends that I kept in the beginning, but I don't talk to them now.
Did you, were you able to work on some of your issues and confront some of those demons in rehab and learn about your disease?
I was able more to learn about my disease,
okay.
I think, and understand it better. But I didn't really learn as much about myself until I went through the steps.
Okay. But those couple weeks were a good break for you?
Oh, absolutely.
So we had that reset helped.
Absolutely,
you
yes.
You get out of rehab after 2 weeks, and what do?
I went home, and then I went straight to a meeting because it was early in the morning.
Man.
And then
good
I went
you.
To a meeting right,
right
after.
That's so huge. So
many, and rare.
So many people walk out of rehab
yeah.
and they just...
Throw open the doors and I'm fixed.
And, well, and they freeze and they
well,
don't
yeah.
make a move and they figure they're going to be okay. Then the denial creeps back in, and a week later, they're back out saying, how the hell did this happen?
Yeah.
You know? Well, I was afraid, you know. It was
yeah.
my first day out, and I needed something to keep me away from drinking.
Yeah.
So,
was there any more step education in rehab, or did they not approach it from that way?
Not at the rehab
I went
to.
A lot of group talking.
A lot of group talks.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
And activities. And,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Pottery?
Yeah, we had speakers come in. No pottery. Just kind of.
I had pottery.
Did you?
Oh, yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah. Well, I was in there for just being
Wait,
absolutely
you had a
crazy.
Resort or what?
Huh?
Were you at a resort? Did you have salsa dancing
yeah,
lessons
kind
too?
Of. Yeah, it was pretty awesome,
Caviar.
Actually.
Nice.
No,
yeah,
no.
Right?
It was still in upstate New York, so it couldn't have been too crazy good.
So you're 2 weeks out from a drink. Or
the longest
maybe a
I ever
more.
Went.
Ah.
Yeah. Yeah, and you go to these meetings, and then you're going on a regular basis?
I did. I went, like, every day. They say 90 and 90.
Yeah.
I probably did about 88.
Oh,
you know?
Failure.
So.
Yeah. Just kidding. Just kidding.
Perfection, not progress.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you find anybody that you were, like, kind of latching onto and that you could at this point yet?
Not right at the immediate start, no.
Yeah.
I was making friends, but I wasn't I didn't find anybody who was, like, sponsor material, not someone
yeah, sure.
I felt comfortable enough for that yet.
Were you utilizing the Big Book at this point?
The Big Book is actually how I met my sponsor. I asked a guy in the program to go through the Big Book with me because he knew it back and forth, right?
Yeah.
And he introduced me to my sponsor.
Awesome.
And we clicked right from the beginning.
So you had a guy go through that with you?
Yes.
I had a lady go through it with
Did
me.
Did you?
Yeah.
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 Yep. Yep.
As long as it's an alcoholic going
yeah.
through it with
yeah.
you.
Yeah. I'm
why
a
not,
full
right?
owner of that. Yeah.
So you find a sponsor. How does that change your course?
Absolutely. I felt like I was accepted. And I felt like I had somebody that I could tell all my silly thoughts to. You know, all my fears. And,
how freeing
you
that
know.
Is.
Yeah. It's somebody like I could be myself with.
The
you
best
know.
Breath in the world all of a sudden. You could breathe. And
you know what? When
God.
I first came into AA, I was just so blown away by how people I didn't know genuinely cared what happened to me.
Yes.
And genuinely wanted to help me and get nothing in return. Mm-hmm. I could not get over that.
Right.
But I loved it. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I want to be these people. You know what I mean? I want to be a part of this.
It was really hard for me because I was brought up, you know, looking at everybody's faults and suspecting things that they've got to have something wrong with them and stuff. And being an only child, to be able to confide in somebody, I had no clue how to do that. So when I was able to, man, it was just fantastic.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And it becomes very organically real to you. You know what I mean? Now, did you ever go back out or no?
No, I have not.
Okay. Wow. Well, look at you. Look at you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't say that. I can't.
Well, let's hope it stays that way.
Yeah, I know. So so you get in, you get a sponsor, you start working the steps, right?
Yep.
Are the steps challenging to you?
The first three I felt I had already done in the hospital. Okay. But, of course, I went through them again with my sponsor.
Formally. Yeah, formally.
Confirmed them.
What about 4 and 5? That's daunting for a lot of people.
I procrastinated. Well,
you,
you know, I mean,
it,
I went
same.
You know, I mean, 1 to 3, I was like, boom, you know, and then 4, it was a good 6-8 months before started writing things down because I was so happy that I was sober. I was honestly afraid that I was going to, you know.
Stir some stuff
up. Yeah,
let's
some stuff
not complicate
and,
this with 4 and 5.
I'm like,
you were
I don't
on the pink
stop,
cloud a
yes,
little bit.
Yes, I didn't want to stop being happy and bring up the past and, you know.
Yeah. But then that's when you got to put your trust in your sponsor and the program and say, you know what? They've been right so far.
Yep.
This is probably going to be good for me even though it feels like it's not.
Right.
So you go through some temporary pain for some long-term gain.
And so far, God's on my side.
Yeah,
so what would make him not want to continue that?
So you do your 4th. How was your 5th?
It was really good. She was so accepting and so understanding. And, you know, I mean, now that I had told her things that I hadn't ever told anybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, things that I was embarrassed to admit to myself even.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so you did a good job.
So being able to do that also brought me closer to her.
It's those 3 admissions to God, ourselves, and another human being. And oftentimes, God and ourselves are fairly simple. But the other human being can be a jump for people.
Yeah.
So if you find someone you can trust, or a lot of people like to find somebody who's completely anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
Who they'll never see again.
I'm lucky I wasn't canceled.
Yeah, cancel culture. So you go through 4 and 5, and then the steps come that are the drop the rock steps, the steps of change and working on yourself. And, you know, I always look at this and say, you know, the person who drank, that put the drink down and came into AA, if I did not change, I would not stay sober.
Right.
So the change had to start, and I'm the only one that can do the work.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone in the world is there to help me if I want it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So what was your experience with those, going through those steps?
Well, 6 and 7, they kind of came at a good time for me because the meeting that I was going to on a regular basis was reading the books.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that helped a lot. It was like perfect timing for me.
Now, are you talking the Drop the Rock book?
Yes.
Okay. You're a proponent of that
the
book.
6 and 7.
So, Brett loves that.
Oh, heck.
He loves that
it
stuff.
It explained everything.
And you know something interesting is for a long time, I thought 6, 7, 8, and 9 were like the flyover steps.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, yeah, I ask him to take them away. Yeah, I got it. But the reality of it is that's where the bulk of the work is, the inside work.
Well, like the 12 and 12.
Well, it's the constant. It's an everyday.
Yeah. Right, and it's not going to go away.
Right.
But you keep on it, your life's going to get better. Your thinking's going to
get better. 12 and 12 actually says it. It's the ones that separate the men and the women from the boys and the girls, without a doubt.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's...
So you start going through 6 and 7. You're reading those books at the same time, which is... Right on the money for you.
I approve.
Yes. Brett approves. And you start to see them working in your life?
It was a long, hard road, and it still is.
I mean,
I don't think I'm ever going to, you know, reach that point where I think, my character defects are gone or,
we never do. We get all the way there.
Right. And you can use them to your advantage in some cases as well. But, you know, I mean, in the beginning, it was really hard because, you know, I would call my sponsor up after something happened and then learn how I should have reacted.
Yep.
You know, and I wasn't very good at the pause. you know. And I was also very, I had an ego.
No.
Yeah. We don't usually have
so
that.
I thought
I've never heard of that before.
E-word.
I thought I knew everything. So
Lego
I,
my ego.
I had to tell everybody, you know,
because
I knew it all.
You need to know this.
Right. And that so got good. Me into trouble a lot. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So.
You know, that's funny, but we all kind of learn at the speed of pain, mm-hmm. you know, and when we do something that's wrong, we feel it mm-hmm. and we know it. We don't mm-hmm. want to admit it. But the next time it happens, maybe we pause.
Mm-hmm. And know? At this point, we right. know we got to talk about it. And that's what you do with your sponsor at first.
Yes.
Is you were, you know, like you said, these things would happen and then you would go.
Right.
You know, but at least we know that now, right?
Mm-hmm. So, but little right. by little, yeah, you'd make
right.
those.
And at least you got a place to go.
Inch
most
by
people
inch,
in the world
it's
don't.
It's a cinch.
It's anyway. By inch, it's a cinch, right. So you go through and you practice the steps, you practice these principles in your life. Do you help other people? To get to the point where you're helping other women?
I feel like I was giving rides. I was doing more service work.
Mm-hmm.
And I help people, obviously, every time by talking to them, mm-hmm. you know, speaking at meetings. And, you know, I was so busy in my life that up until this point, I didn't sponsor. I had two jobs mm-hmm. for many years, and then I was doing job in college. And now that it was a God moment when I was asked to be sponsored because this is a perfect time. I feel like I'm more free and ready.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
It seems like everything timed out for you pretty good in sobriety,
my
right?
My gosh.
Yes.
It's like that's what happens for us, I think, is things just fall into place.
As soon as we let go.
As soon as we get out of our own way.
Yeah, yeah.
Things seem to fall in place. The universe takes care of us. So how, tell us about your experiences helping other alcoholics.
Well, I used to go to rehab and speak.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
I've done that quite a few times. I've spoken at other meetings a lot, too. Just being there for people, you know. That's the most part is showing up, I think. You know, and when you see them being there for you, you want to return it.
Right. So. It's very easy to get sober, go through the steps, feel good, and say, all right, I don't need to go as much,
mm-hmm.
you know. But the more you go and the more you work with other people, you start to find these deeper things you didn't know were there.
Right. And there's always something more to learn.
There is.
Oh,
yeah.
Boy. More shall be revealed.
Yeah. It always is. And, you know, so you're sober now and you're coming up on an anniversary and you're still going to meetings on a regular basis.
I am.
And people always ask me, you know, after you've been sober for so long, why do you still go to those meetings? Because they think AA is about you quitting drinking and that is it.
Mm-hmm.
But
of course.
There's – that's the tip of the iceberg. That's what
right.
people see. But it's really about living a good life and AA giving you a design for that.
Right.
Right?
Absolutely.
And is that the way it's worked for you?
Yes.
And
definitely.
So you keep coming back because –
Because I need to.
I
need to be reminded of it, you know, and I also, you know, get a little itchy if I don't get mm-hmm. a meeting. You know, I mean, meetings are probably closer to a church experience than I've ever had, you know. I feel very comfortable there, and it's just, it's something I need on a regular basis.
You know what's interesting is it's really hard to explain to someone how you can feel a certain way, walk into a meeting and sit there for an hour and walk out and feel completely different.
Oh, yes. Man.
Because you've had a spiritual experience just sitting there drinking a cup of coffee, listening to other people talk about their lives and their disease and about their solutions.
Mm-hmm.
And you walk out of there and you're like a different person.
Yeah, the battery, you know? It's a recharging moment. You know, the batteries get recharged every time.
Absolutely.
But, yeah, I mean, how many times, and I don't know if you guys have ever experienced this, but how many times I have sat there, even in the car, like I could go do this. I could go shopping, you know, whatever, anything. But, you know I know I made myself go in and those thoughts go completely away. And then I think,
right.
Why the hell did I even get there? But that's why I got to get there, right?
Exactly.
Because they'll keep coming back like that. Next thing you know, I'm itchy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, very,
and now,
very
now, do
itchy.
You feel that, right?
Oh, absolutely.
If you don't
yes.
go to meetings 4 or 5 days, you're like, something's wrong.
Yes. Because yeah, and you don't think about that you missed a meeting right away. At least I don't, you mm-hmm. know, and then, you know.
And I learned the lesson yeah. recently because, you know, I've not been on vacation in a very long time. And we just recently went on a week-long trip. And I knew there was meetings. I looked it up and everything, but I got wrapped up in the moment. And how was I when I got back?
You were a little tweaky there.
Yeah, I was definitely a little. Yeah, I was definitely a little off. You know.
Yeah.
And yeah, so it does happen when we aren't keeping up with it.
Yep. So as you now, in my story, the drugs were never really my bag. I did them. But I drank. Drinking was my thing. Is it the same with you?
Absolutely. Pot just enhanced it.
Yeah. And the drugs were like, yeah.
And that was the only thing I did was pot.
Was there alcoholism in your family?
Yes. Absolutely.
Parents?
A lot. My father, and on his side, I would say it was the worst. His father died of alcoholism.
Mm-hmm. So did mine.
Yeah.
Cirrhosis, yeah.
My father was an alcoholic, but... he was always so tired from work that he would have a few and pass out. So
yeah.
It was never a horrible experience with
was
him.
Was my father your father? Because this is what my father did. So.
I mean, you knew he was an alcoholic because
right.
he drank.
But he wasn't abusive or...
Right.
God, this is my father.
Yeah.
Right. Just
yeah. I mean, it makes you wonder if they were an alcoholic. But then, you know, you get into AA and you realize there's so many different kinds of alcoholics.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we can't judge them
based on the
levels, right? Because, you know... And this is a topic we recently brought up, is we have to identify, not judge, right? And or not kind of pick them apart. Oh, how could they be in here? That couldn't have been that bad, you know? Or
well, when I walked in, my idea of an alcoholic was the drunk under the bridge with a bottle in a car, in a brown paper bag who is homeless and has lost everything. You know, that's one kind of bottom.
With a big red nose and a knapsack on a stick.
Yeah. But, you know, my bottom was being in an extremely dark place and very isolated mm-hmm. and just realizing that my life was just going down the shitter and I was extremely unhappy 24/7.
Mm-hmm. But it was all life's fault.
Yeah,
for me.
Well, you know, there comes a point when you're like, you know what? Alcohol is a part of this. I know it, you know, because
yeah.
I'm drinking like crazy more than anybody. And this has got to be a part of it. And then you get into AA and you put the drink down. And like you say, you're like, holy shit.
Yeah.
I have never not drank for a day in so long. And here I've not drank in 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Look at me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting better. But so it feels better. But the work has not really begun yet. Job one, don't drink. Can't get sober while you're drinking.
Yeah.
But then the real work starts in the steps. And like, you know, just like you said, it's a different pace for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And the way you go through the steps quickly or slowly, for each different step you went through, 1 through 3, bam, 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 got to 4 and 5, slowed right down.
Yep.
I did the same thing. And then I kind of blew off 6 and 7 for a while. You know, I did them. I set them. I set them, but I didn't do them.
Right.
And then I went back and started thinking, you know, did I just experience a character defect in action? Because I certainly feel like I did. Maybe I need to take a look at that.
Yeah.
And then once you do that real work, then you've got that recurring inventory that you're supposed to be doing on a daily basis or close to it
mm-hmm.
That keeps you on the level. And, you know, this is the design for life.
Yes.
And I wish somebody had come to me when I was like 6 years old and said, we're going to learn a new thing today. It's called the design for life. I probably wouldn't listen to anyway.
Yeah.
But you know, a lot of people go through their entire lives and never have that.
Exactly.
Unfortunately,
yeah, I think everybody should go through 12
I know.
Steps.
I know, right? How fortunate we
are.
Well,
you know, that's why we practice these principles in all our affairs. You know, I deal with it. I dealt with it today at work. You know, people were struggling with certain things with their, you know, staff and controlling what they do and all that. And I was like, you got to seek to understand, you know, and all this other stuff that comes into play. Yeah. And it's so true. But it was so
worth. Brett is so wise. Right?
But that is the truth.
But how many times in your lifetime, you know, with people that aren't in AA, do you bring up AA sayings?
All the time.
Oh, my God.
You
know?
I bring it up with my kids all the time.
In fact, that's how I found out that people are in the program. I recognize those things. I'm like, ooh, I know something about you.
Yeah, you know, and you know what? The good advice is good advice.
Heck yes.
And you get a shitload of it in AA.
That's right.
And then you see it in the outside world, you're going like, this applies.
Mm-hmm.
Like stuff with my kids, I do it all the time. And I always say, well, in AA we say, you know, one day at a time. We say, surrender to win. You know, you know what I mean? Would you rather be happy or would you rather be right?
Yeah.
I lay that shit on them all the time. They gotta be sick of it. They're like, God damn AA.
Right.
And they're always right. Those sons of bitches.
It's a lot of good advice.
Do you mix up your meetings?
Oh, no. I guess I don't.
You kind of get stuck in a local loop.
I do.
Yeah.
Yes.
Me too, because it's comfortable and it's convenient.
Right.
Every once in a while, I'll get a new sponsee or something that'll say, you know, why don't you go to this meeting with me? And I go, and it's always a great experience. And you think I do it all the time because it was a great experience, but I don't.
It's something I'm talking about right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to do.
And a lot of it for me is just laziness and convenience.
Yes, convenience for me a lot too. And I don't like driving in the city.
Yeah.
You know, and parking in the city. That's
I don't either.
And where we are, we're very fortunate. I mean, what is it, 164 meetings we have in this area?
Oh, my God, yes. They're everywhere.
Just so happens to coincide with the number of people. But anyways, yeah.
I can't get away from them, the meetings. You know, it's just too many of them. is there anything else you'd like to add that you'd like the listeners to know that you have learned that you think could be helpful? I'm sure there's a million things, but
I know.
Now you're
so
under the gun.
It's
very pressuring you.
I know.
That was asked of me once, and I said, you know what? To me, the key to this thing really is just one day at a time.
You know, I got something.
Yeah.
What would you say to the new woman coming in that has this thought that, and I've heard this a lot, I can't relate to another woman. They're so catty and all this other stuff, you know. And so I know that they struggle with that. It's just like us guys struggling with asking another guy on a date, essentially. But, you know, I know that's a real problem.
He's talking about a sponsor. When you ask a guy to be your sponsor, it's hard for a guy to do it. Yeah. Will you be my sponsor?
Right. But, you know, I know that is something from just talking with people that is hard to do for women for
Women can be really mean to each other because we know where to, you know, how to hit where it hurts. and I don't know. I was that person in school that was obviously not popular, and I was, you know, not with a clique or anything like that. So, of course, coming into AA, I was like, I'm not going to be part of that clique or, you know, I mean, I didn't really consider people catty in AA.
Mm-hmm.
I consider them to be very welcoming and warm, but I, you know, they weren't going to know about me. They weren't going to know the truth about me. And if they did, then boy, they would hate me anyway, you know, and then they would make fun of me. And that, you know, I mean, so I think that every woman probably has that, just as every guy does, but when they're so nice and welcoming and warm, you can't help but, you know, feel open.
So just trust
it. Right. Yeah. Just go with it.
Have you ever explored any other avenues of the recovery world, like Al-Anon or ACOA?
I've never been to Al-Anon.
No?
I did try and help a couple friends get into Al-Anon.
Nice.
Yeah, they're not.
People always say to me, you know, they'll come to me, oh, you're an AA, you know, my husband's really blah, 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 blah. And I'll say, well, the first thing I'll say is you should go to an Al-Anon meeting. Tell them what you're there for. They're in the same boat as you and they can help you. I've had one person take me up on it. And that's because I went to the meeting with him. But yeah, that's always a great suggestion because that's a good starting point.
Oh, it was a great suggestion for me because I was dealing with, you know, I didn't have alcoholic parents, but they had all the things that go along with it. And one of the things I dealt with, codependency and dependency, and that was affecting my own relationship. And it was a fantastic experience and helped me right through that pretty quick. But we do leave some damage out there.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's good to maybe recommend that.
Yeah, how
old
are your kids now?
My son is graduating high school, and my daughter's going into her third year of college.
So, oh, wow.
Okay. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yep.
So, and you've laid a lot of AA on them?
I try not to use the AA thing, you know, but we also, you know, there's little things, you know, that we'll say, you know, like sayings, you know, that we have in AA.
Little truisms.
You know, yes, we'll, you know, say those things back and forth, or I'll say, you know, one day at a time, and it'll be like, come on, Mom, you know, but one of the things that I think is kind of funny is, you know, there's so many people from AA that I see out in public that my children don't know. And, you know, they're asking me, who's that? Why did they just say hi to you? And I tell them it's a friend of Bill. And now they know what that means.
Yeah, sure. That's cool.
You know, and nobody else around needs to know, what that means. So.
Yep. Well, we'd like to thank you for coming on, telling your story and sharing with us. I know we've got a very special guest coming up next who may or may not be in a relationship with you.
Yes.
Yes. We'll discuss that within that length.
Yes.
So until next time on the Glumlot Podcast, I'm Mark.
I'm Brett.
And Tim. As we wrap up another episode of the Glumlot Podcast, we want to extend our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in today. Navigating the path to recovery from alcohol and other substances is a journey filled with challenges, triumphs, and self-discovery. Remember, we're not affiliated with Alcoholics Anonymous, but we're here to provide a safe space for open conversations about the complexities of recovery. Your stories, courage, and resilience inspire us and our listeners alike. If you or someone you know is on the transformative journey, know that you're not alone. Join us next time as we continue to explore the diverse facets of recovery. Until then, stay strong, stay connected, and remember that each day is a step towards a brighter, sober tomorrow. Thank you for being part of the Glumlot community.